This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment and it's our Mind Matters series. We've brought it forward to Monday because tomorrow is World Toilet Day. And our guest, our regular Associate Professor, Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nurdin, consultant psychiatrist from University of Malaya Medical Center, is in the studio. And he's not pleased that we've actually brought the show forward. How are you, Dr. Amir?
Hi, good, thanks. We have to make way for World Toilet Day.
Yes, I mean, it's important, don't you think?
It's very important. Mm-hmm. It's very important indeed.
Why do you think it's important?
Well, first of all, we're talking about what we were talking about today. Constipation is quite a big issue. Okay. I'll tell you that. That's the first thing. Secondly, you've got to have clean toilets.
Yeah, we do, for sure. I think we all need toilet training.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm. I know we've improved, but I think we've still got a long way to go, don't you think?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Talk about building first world mindsets. I think you look at our toilets and it tells you we have a long way to go. Anyway, today's topic on Mind Matters is, are our elderly unhappy? And joining us also, Associate Professor Dr. Fariza Mohammad Hairi. She's from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine, Faculty of Medicine at University of Malaya. Welcome to the show, Dr. Fariza. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you.
Dr. Amir, what is this relationship between aging and mental health? I mean, we always associate aging with certain chronic conditions. I mean, you talk about heart problems, hypertension, diabetes, and now, of course, we have neurodegenerative diseases that we're talking about, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. But aging and mental health, we rarely talk about that. What is the relationship?
I know. I think that's why I'm actually quite excited today to be here, and also quite excited to have my colleague and friend, Dr. Fariza, along. Because, we've talked a lot about mental health over the past year. And it's been mainly about young adolescents or adults, but we've really sort of not discussed elderly and mental health issues. And we've got to take it into context. I mean, first, by 2030, we're going to have quite a number of us that's going to be aging and elderly. In fact, 15% is the data that they're sharing.
What, 65 and above?
65 and above, wasn't it?
60 and above.
60 and above.
For Malaysia.
It was 2035. We've brought it down to 2030 now. Mm-hmm. That we will be an aging nation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aged. So that's concerning. Secondly is that we often don't, we're quite fascinated with children having a mental illness or a mental health problem. We often forget that we're all going to age and get to the elderly population, and they're also another risk group for various types of mental health issues. Stress, particularly issues that we discussed just now, constipation and other issues that might relate to that, medical problems that might cause certain mental health issues, but frank mental illnesses. And, you mentioned one, dementia comes under mental illness, apart from being treated by our colleagues in geriatrics, but also depression. Depression is also quite seen. And something that we don't talk about is things like, for example, substance misuse, particularly prescription medications that they might have accidentally been on for quite a long time, and then suddenly, at some point of their life, they have difficulties in actually removing. So there's lots of issues that the elderly have that we really have not really discussed at all. And I think this is one of those opportunities for us to have that discussion.
You know, Dr. Fariza, you were part of that research.
Peace Project?
Yes, the Peace Project, the UM's Prevent Elder Abuse and Neglect Initiative. I think we spoke about it when the research first came out about, mental abuse amongst the elderly and things like that. But in your opinion, how do you think our elderly are doing in terms of their mental health? What's the research showing you?
We actually have another nationwide survey which was conducted last year by Ministry of Health, the National Health and Morbidity Survey in 2018. And we found that about 1 in 10 has got dementia in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So the current issue about mental health and elderly is actually becoming more important in public health as well,
okay,
not just among the clinicians in the hospital, but also in the population, in the community.
I mean, loneliness and social isolation is something everyone's talking about now.
Definitely.
And the data showing that, smoking and, heart problems and all of that is probably going to be, second to loneliness and social isolation. That is a scary thought. I mean, is that an exaggeration, Dr. Fariza?
It is happening. So we shouldn't be saying that we are exaggerating it. It's coming up in the country as well. And we see a lot of people in the rural area where we did our survey that the elderly are taking care of the elderly. And also people living alone in the homes. So there's nobody to take care of them. So we have to also educate the youngsters on taking care of the elderly.
So that's a rural situation. Yeah. Probably the youngsters have come out to work in the city and things like that. But what's happening in the city area with the elderly?
In the city, we shouldn't outcast the city folks because we see that in the city they have other constraints and other issues in terms of living well and taking care of their good health and mental health as well. So we have to also take into consideration that these issues are also happening. Loneliness. And in terms of the support, it's actually very, very important. Sometimes we see that we are providing physical support, but in terms of the functional support, it's not there or it's missing or not being firmed up yet.
Would you say purpose is central to this issue? I mean, a lot of us think as we grow older that it's time to relax and retire, and that's not really the case. Sometimes relaxing and retiring doesn't work for everyone. Mm-hmm. Do you think having purpose is central to good mental health when you age?
Yeah, that's one of the things that should be emphasised on.
Okay.
Your purpose in life.
Dr. Amir, what does good mental health in the elderly look like?
Well, first of all, I think it's, you know, with regard to health and mental health, the main objective is actually to be able to be highly productive, whether it's in your day-to-day practice or within society. And I think when we talk about health, as we've shared many times, it's just not the lack of physical health. It's also the lack of social well-being and, more importantly, the lack of mental health. So if you don't address one of these three components, even if you're physically healthy, you're technically unhealthy. And this goes back to that issue that we're sharing just now about loneliness. I mean, we're seeing it already in our society, in our communities. And I think it's definitely going to grow because our population is aging. You know, it's just a fact of life and, you know, it's just a situation that we have been in. But what are we doing about it? And I think that's the most important issue.
But this is not a problem that's going to be central to Malaysia. It's happening all over the world.
Yeah.
How is Japan coping, for an example?
Japan has been an aged nation
for a while.
So they have a lot of things in place there. And we can learn a lot from them in terms of the support from the not just the family, the community, the government. So we can actually look up to Japan and see how they actually progress.
Are you concerned for us?
Of course.
I always say this over and over and over. We know we are going to be an aging nation. We can learn from people who have been going through it for a while, Japan being one. But we seem to be very relaxed about it.
Perhaps
are we doing enough?
Not relax. There are things coming up at the moment.
Such as?
From the Ministry of Health. They have guidelines on dementia. And then there are also other issues where we are taking into consideration. We have our policy for older people, older persons in the country. And there's also the policy from Ministry of Health as well, which has been for a very long time. It's just that we don't really see it on the ground. Perhaps the people on the ground, they are not aware of all these things being in place.
Such as, could you give me an example?
Even from the Ministry of Women, Community and
Women, Family and Community Development.
Family and Community Development. The issue of elderly care has been taken by one department and also by the social welfare department. So there are things where people can actually find out in terms of, for example, support, where they can get financial aids for the elderly. And there are also volunteer program actually, where the elderly can look up for and ask for help in terms of doing their groceries or helping them with the chores in the house, which most of us are not aware of the existence of this program. It's actually been in the system.
Okay. I think Hannah, you just spoke about it this morning. I think I heard sort of getting the elderly back into employment.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think the Ministry of Women and Family and Community Development is working on very hard. Let's talk about depression, Dr. Amir. How common is depression among the elderly in Malaysia?
I think, first of all, well, depression is the most common mental illness in Malaysia. I can rightly say that. And in terms of the elderly, definitely it's one of the more important issues plaguing this group of people. Because the main issue with depression and the elderly is that if this person has other medical comorbidities, which they often do, then depression is going to be a negative prognosis for most of those other medical situations. Secondly, as well, because of, as we age, we also have many medical and also functional issues. It increases the risk of individuals with the risk to develop depression, to therefore get the depression, or if they've had depression in the past and they've actually become better, that depression can recur. More importantly as well, some of the symptoms of depression might mimic other medical conditions which we really need to tease out, you know, things like dementia, for example. Because of the cognitive decline or the inability to think and focus, sometimes people are mistaken to have dementia when actually they're having depression. And the difference is that dementia, depression particularly, is a little bit more easier to treat. And once you treat it, individuals are able to live quite full lives. Now, also we have to take note that with depression, the inability to socialize becomes impaired. And for the elderly, especially if you're living alone or within a very small group of people because your circle has become smaller and smaller, it really makes it a little bit difficult for them to do their day-to-day activities. So these are just some of the issues.
How do you differentiate between depression and dementia?
Well, first of all, in terms of both of these conditions, sometimes it's a little bit harder. It's a bit hard to tease out, but often the dementia will have a more cognitive component, whereas the depression will have more of a mood component. And also there are other telltale signs in terms of signs and symptoms, which you often don't get with depression, which is quite classical for dementia.
Okay, so one is cognition, dementia, and mood is linked to depression. Can you have dementia and depression at the same time?
You can, and that's when sometimes becomes a little bit more trickier. And I think if that happens, then often we would treat both of those conditions together. But it's just that if you're able to tease them out, it just makes it a little bit easier for the patient particularly, but more so the family in actually caring for these individuals.
And what is the impact of someone living with both dementia and depression, Dr. Fariza?
Oh, there'll be impact on the carer, depending whether the person is staying at home, having the carer as an informal carer, like the family members or friends or even neighbours. And also, if the person is staying in an institution like nursing home, then there'll be the formal carers. So it depends on whether the person who is having dementia and depression at the same time, whether they can afford a private or nurse, and that has an impact on the cost. So if they are just at home, the carers, the family carers or the family caregivers need to know how to take care of them. And most of the time you will hear people will be saying that, oh, perhaps that old person is having is being crazy or being senile. So this negative impact on others towards this elderly who's going through depression and dementia, we need to try to change the perception. Perhaps they are not actually crazy or senile, but it needs to be. We need to change the perception of the people who look at dementia that way. So the impact can be among the family members itself, and if they have to take care of this person who are having problems, then they might actually need to be off from work. So it has a burden on the caregiver themselves.
So it's very obvious that support is lacking.
Support is very
important. We don't have a solution when it comes to supporting the elderly In this case, when it comes to mental health issues, because we all can't be giving up our jobs. I mean, someone needs to put food on the table.
Yeah.
And that those are areas in which I feel we're lacking in a huge way, don't you think?
Yes, I agree. Because even to become a carer, it's very, very demanding, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, does it mean that everybody can be a carer? Do you need to be trained?
Yes, everybody can be a carer as long as they know what to do and how to help the elderly.
Okay, and that support also is important.
Yeah.
We'll come back and find out whether or not depression among the elderly is recognised at the primary care level and community level. As you said, in the community level, I think a lot more needs to be done. But in the primary care level, I mean, are, you know, GPs, for an example, picking it up early enough? And, you know, you can't be doing everything as a psychiatrist, Dr. Amir. So we'll come back and find out more and have that discussion. But if you have a question, give us a call. It's 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or just tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. It's our Health and Living segment and it's our Mind Matters series. Are our elderly unhappy is what we're discussing with Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq. Amir Nordin, he's a consultant psychiatrist at UMMC. Associate Professor Dr. Fariza Mohammad Hairi, she's from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine, Faculty of Medicine, University Malaya. We're discussing, you know, all the mental health issues that can come up with the elderly person. You know, we were discussing dementia, depression just now. And, you know, do you think it's being picked up early enough, Dr. Amir? I mean, you know, sometimes you present, not everyone's going to come and see a psychiatrist immediately on a GP level in the clinic, kasihatans. I mean, do people understand or are able to tease out these issues?
Well, I think, first of all, I think more can be done. I think that's quite important because even within the community, depression itself, it's really only recently that I think the pickup rate's just a little bit better. Because the awareness rate is a little bit more, the stigma is just a little bit less. I don't say it's less, but it's definitely a bit lesser. And more importantly, especially for the young adults, people are coming forward saying that they've got some issues, and then we can sort of tease out whether they actually truly have a mental illness or is it just a mental health issue that probably requires one of our allied healthcare colleagues to assist. But for the elderly, I think as we were discussing at the very beginning, and this is why it's quite important and interesting, again, to keep on talking about it, is because we often miss out that the elderly can also develop other medical conditions that are not classical, like, you know, hypertension, myocardial infarction, falls. They can also develop mental health issues, which includes issues as in loneliness, as you've mentioned, is an issue in itself. They can also develop mental illnesses, which could be due to aging, like dementia. And also they can develop common mental illnesses that we often see in adults, which are things like depression. Now, we also know for the elderly, because of, you know, the way that they're just made up as we get a bit elderly, there are other psychiatric or mental illnesses that which may be contributed by the medical conditions, either by the treatment that they're on, some of the medications that might cause them. We call them having an acute confusion, delirium is one of them. Or they could generally have a medical mental health issue due to the condition that they have, like, for example, a stroke. You know, they could also develop certain behavior changes as a result of their medical condition. So we need to think about them as another population that requires a little bit more attention. And that includes also being a little bit more sensitive to picking up issues like depression that might happen in the elderly. Now, the risk is going to be a bit higher because the population is aging. And as a result of that, and as we've shared with, you know, Dr. Shariza has shared, in certain communities, you know, there are also other risks. You know, in the cities, there might be a risk of financial risk. In the rural areas, there might be a situation where there's just nobody around. Family members have left for the city or their colleagues have just passed away along the way. So they become more and more isolated, and that increases their risk to develop, you know, mental health issues per se. So we've just got to be a little bit more sensitive, because the most important thing is that once you are able to detect and treat, then these people actually do quite well. And I think that's where we don't want to miss that opportunity to actually make that difference.
Do we have enough people to detect and treat?
Well, definitely for, you know, if we're talking about the number of family practitioners out there, you know, whether it's a general practitioner or the family medical specialist, then there should be enough people to actually be able to detect and treat, because you don't actually have to go to a tertiary level centre. if you're able to detect an individual with depression, most doctors can actually treat mild moderate depression. It's when you're getting to that more severe condition that individuals might be requiring a little bit more extra assistance within the healthcare system.
Okay, so it is there. We can access your clinic, Kesihatan, for an example.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, there's even, you know, scales that they use, the geriatric depression scale that's commonly used. And I think most of the my colleagues doing general practitioner, in order to get through the exams, they have to actually be able to detect and diagnose and treat people above the age of 60 with basic common mental illnesses. What's most important is that they also need to know when to refer. And as you rightly mentioned, we don't want them to refer everybody because I think they can actually treat them, you know.
Okay. How many geriatric psychiatrists do we have?
I know, it's very scary. I was just having a chat with a colleague. Eight.
Apparently eight in the country?
Yeah, eight.
Do we need geriatric psychiatrists? I mean, it's great to have them, but if we only have eight, what are our options?
Well, again, most psychiatrists, all the psychiatrists, 420 of us, which is not a big number also. But, you know, all of us go through geriatric psychiatry rotations. But if you need that extra support, then you've got colleagues who have subspecialized in the elderly who are psychiatrists to begin with. So these individuals might be able to assist you for that really difficult case that you might have. You know, the one who has been on treatment doesn't seem to get better, or if you're having other issues that you're not able to sort of navigate, then you can get them to assist. But most of us, if not all of us, have actually got basic training in taking care of the elderly.
So in 10 years' time, we'll be an aging nation. We'll be an aged nation. We would have reached that status. So 15% of the population that's 60 years and above is going to be the number. Now, just 2 days ago, the population numbers came out. We are at 32.6 million people today. Mm-hmm. Even if you take 15% now, that is a lot of people. With 420 psychiatrists, eight geriatric psychiatrists. It's a scary thought. I mean,
so we really have to empower the elderly in taking care of themselves.
What can we do? And you worked on that PEACE program. What can we do better?
We need to get the message across more to the public, to the community, on how to actually try to detect whether a person is becoming, having some mental issues or mental illness. So sometimes from the way they talk or the way they act, from their activities, you can actually see some deterioration in terms of their activities or in terms of the words that they use. Sometimes they might just forget certain things. And if you can actually see the difference, the changes that the person is going through, and if there's a close-knit community where each and every one of them within the neighbourhoods can actually take care of each other, they can always alert someone. And we can always send or get the nearest general practitioner or send the particular person to the clinic kesihatan to have to do a screening.
And based on the PEACE program, you're looking at elder abuse and neglect.
Yeah.
Now, I know the research came out to show quite alarming numbers as far as elder abuse and neglect is concerned. You want to tell us more?
From that particular research, we found that in the urban area, it's about 1 in 10 person who has experienced any kind of abuse or neglect condition. And in the rural area, it's about 1 in 20. So the issue, the magnitude of the problem is actually similar throughout the whole world. So Malaysia is not, it's not something, the things that we found is not something very unique to our country. It's the same as what is found all over the world. So in that particular condition, we need to actually inform the carers and also inform the elderly themselves. Sometimes they might not realize that they've been neglected, or they might not be realized that they've been abused, especially in terms of financial abuse, where we found that it was quite high and substantial in numbers. You can always see in the newspaper about scams, especially the financial scams that's happening. So that is actually, it's really happening in our population.
Oh, Dr. Amir, I mean, I just did the math and, you know, in 2030, I will be almost there.
I'm getting there.
In 11 years' time, you know, I will be almost 60. And so will you, I think.
Oh, a bit younger, but I mean, nevertheless.
But I'm like, we're going to be part of the statistic of this aging nation. Are you not concerned at all? I mean, like, we know, okay, so we know Malaysia is not unique. So my question is, what can we do better?
That's why we have to know what we can actually help ourselves. Prepare ourselves towards before we become older. So we have to be financially stable. We need to have all the basic needs in place, especially in terms of our medical care, because sometimes we might forget that our medical care is not cheap. It's expensive as you grow older, and we have all the different diseases already in place. So you really need to have all those insurance in place. Maybe in terms of who's going to take care of your daily needs. Just a simple thing like getting your groceries done every week. And maybe you need somebody to actually help you in terms of transporting, sending you to the hospital if you need to see the doctor for follow-up. So those simple things needs to be in place. And what we're advocating is we want it to be like, we want people to have a healthy aging and also aging in place so that we can still stay wherever we are and age gracefully. Not like you plan after you've retired, you want to go back to your kampung, but you have not been staying for maybe 40 years. Yep. So you're not familiar with that area and you might get a bit disorientated.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just like children in the city who want to bring parents from the kampung to live in the city.
Oh, yeah, similarly.
It is the same problem. I mean, we think we're doing them a favour, but actually we're doing disservice to them, actually. But people don't see that.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. I learned that from experience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you know, this is, again, some of the issues when we talk about mental health. Not mental illness, but mental health issues. It's about, you know, family, friends, what's available around you, what you're familiar with, because this is important for that population as well. You know, if you remove them from their, you know, the place that they've always lived and expecting them to suddenly change, you will get a change of behavior for some of them. And they will come sometimes to see us. And then we will, you know, you might say that this person has depression, but actually they're adjusting and they're very slow to adjust to that living condition. And actually what you need to do is then just address that. And most of the times they'll be able to share with you. So this is where I said that sometimes you really got to be at least cognizant of the fact that these people can develop certain conditions, but not everybody that comes has, you know, depression. You've really got to make sure that you've not missed a medical condition that might be mimicking depression. And secondly, there are other social, cultural factors that you really need to address as well in order for these individuals to be able to maintain a good, healthy mental health. And I think this is one of the, I think, quite important aspects of it.
Peace, I think, also looked at psychological abuse, and that came through in the research, the study. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, it's what we have been talking about since the beginning, that psychological abuse or abuse in terms of emotion is also happening in the, within our elderly population in the country. And all this abuse happens because most of the time, the family members, they don't understand that what they're doing is actually hurting the elderly. I can just give you one quote, one example. For example, in this particular family, actually the daughter wanted to change the mother's bowl, which the mother actually have bought it for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's just because the bowl has got a chip. So the daughter told the mother that, I want to change this bowl because it has a chip and it might hurt somebody who's trying to use it. But the mother, each time when the daughter asks, the mom will just say, no, the bowl is still good. We can still use it. So each time the response from the mum will be like that. The bowl is still good. You don't have to change it. What actually the mother meant was don't change, which was not kept. Which was not captured by the daughter. Mm-hmm. So the words used by the elderly sometimes is misinterpreted by the young ones. So that is also another issue where language used by elderly, what they meant is actually different. And sometimes they just want to say in a nicer way by not trying to hurt the younger generation. So that's why they say, it's okay, you don't have to change it. But actually what they meant is, don't change it. I don't want it to be changed. Because the moment they change, then they start to get a bit agitated and it interrupts with their emotion. So simple things like this, sometimes it's very important for us to also look out. And when we talk to the elderly, it's important for us to make sure that we understand them at their language. Mm-hmm.
That's difficult, don't you think,
Dr. Amin? It is difficult.
Yeah, it is difficult. I mean, I always tell my mum she's a hoarder. I mean, like, get rid of stuff, mum. Why do we have free gifts from 1999? You know, just let's just get rid of it. But then, you know, after a while, I just give up. I'm like, it's okay. If it makes you happy that it's here, then that's fine, you know.
Yeah, but it's maybe just it little has got some things. Sentimental
yes,
values.
It is just little things like that.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. You're shaking your head, Dr. Amir. You are relating to everything I'm saying, don't you? Mental health also has an impact on your physical health. Yep. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, so there's lots of studies that have shown, like, for example, if an individual had recently had a physical disability and they're currently having depression, particularly, because that's the most common. Second is, of course, anxiety disorders. Then it will impinge on their recovery. And that's why for some colleagues in cardiology, especially at certain ages, the risk of developing depression post a heart attack is about between 30 to 50%. And we know that individuals that are developing these conditions often don't do very well in terms of the prognosis for their heart. Similarly, with regards to strokes, 30% of them have the risk of developing depression as well. And again, having depression post-stroke doesn't do very well with regards to their recovery. And also in terms of diabetes, because these are some of the three most common medical conditions that we often see as we age, which again, there is an effect. And the reason being is that certain mental illnesses actually reduce function in terms of your ability to motivate yourself or your ability to actually enjoy what you're doing or your ability to actually move. And therefore, as a result of that, you then stress further on the medical condition that you might be having. Second is, of course, the issue about compliance. So individuals who are having a mental illness, particularly depression or even a psychotic condition, are often not going to be compliant to their medication. And therefore, they're literally not going to get better because they're not taking the medications that they've been asked to take. And again, this results in individuals also impinging on their physical health.
Okay.
So there's a lot of these kind of connections between the two. And I think this is where we also need to just be just a little bit aware that for the elderly, it's not as straightforward when we're caring for them. There are these little small little bits and bobs that we really need to think about when we're looking at them.
But what's happening in the brain that causes us to start, think the way we do when we're older?
Well, there's a bit of personality there as well. So certain personalities might be a little bit more fixed, particularly if some parts of the brain starts to shrink. We also know that...
So on a physiological level, something's
happening. More physiological level, yeah. The other one is that some of us might be having little micro strokes as well, which might make us have certain mental health conditions, particularly memory issues, which might result in certain ways of doing it. And of course, it just could be, emotional rebellion where we just don't want to change. And sometimes we've got to tease that out. I mean, this individual does not actually have a problem. It's just that this person is not very happy to be here. And again, these are where I think, sometimes, when I was much younger, I'm not that old.
I was like,
when I was much younger, like, in this field.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
You know, sometimes you take it quite literally, but yeah. You know, as you get a little bit more, wisdom in the area, you sort of look at it from multiple angles. And I think this is also important because, you know, one of the things that I personally learned working with Dr. Fariza and her team in the piece is about not really mental illness or mental health conditions or, you know, geriatrics. It's just taking care of elderly. You know, for example, the tools that they use post-stroke, which, you know, if you're using a normal spoon that you use, it might not do very well. But, you know, apparently there's these real innovations out there where you've got this gimbal thing where you can actually hold a spoon and it doesn't shake. And this really increases the quality of life if these individuals. Secondly, just being cognizant that the carer is also struggling. And this is another thing that I also learned, that, you know, addressing not only the patient but the carer actually helps in the care of the person who's not well. Because, you know, often we sort of focus on the patient, yeah. And we forgot that there's a carer there who's also struggling. But once you address the carer, then automatically, you know, their care for their elderly person that has an issue becomes a little bit better. And both of their mental health actually improves. And sometimes there's no need for any medication. It's just literally addressing these issues. And I think this is where it's quite important for us. Also, we have to address that these individuals used to be, and they are still probably quite prominent in whatever they're doing. You know, just because there's a, you know, 75-year-old uncle out there, we straight away assume he's an elderly man. He could have been somebody really important in one point. And just addressing that also improves mental health, because we know that, you know, developing some level of empowerment, you know, respect actually improves mental well-being. So these are just some of the things that, you know, we need to be aware of. But at the same time, we have to be also aware that there's going to be a subpopulation of people that genuinely have a medical condition that once you detect and treat early, these people can actually recover quite well.
Okay. And, you know, sometimes I think just us calling people uncle and auntie, especially when you're not even the elderly yet, can be quite traumatizing, don't you think? That sort of speeds up your deterioration of your mental health. We'll come back and find out more after the market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. If you have just joined us, it's our Mind Matters series on health and living. We're discussing, are our elderly unhappy? Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq Amir Nordin, a consultant psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center, and Associate Professor Dr. Fariza Muhammad Hairi from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, in the studio with us, trying to discuss, you know, and find a little bit more about what's happening to our elderly and their mental health. Dr. Fariza, about 34%, based on the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2018 on elderly health, 34% of our elderly perceive themselves as having poor oral health-related quality of life. Now, who would have thought of that?
Yeah.
Oral health?
Oral health. I mean, we are a dentist.
We're supposed to have some of the better healthcare system in the world. Why is it that, you know, something as basic as oral health is a big problem?
Perhaps the elderly, they don't see the importance of taking care of their oral health, because sometimes they might think that because they don't have teeth, they're just using dentures. That's not important for them to go and see the dentist. So it's very important for them, even if they have dentures, to still see the dentist and get their oral health improved.
I would like to add on that, because coincidentally, this year, I think I was in a conference, a dental conference. I know, what's a psychiatrist doing in a dental conference? That's the first thing.
Yes, I was wondering.
But the thing is that I was sitting to this Japanese expert, and apparently listening to his presentation, the number of teeth that you have after a certain age actually determines how healthy you are. So it's important for individuals to actually care for their teeth, because the less teeth you have, the more health-related problems that you actually get. It's almost like a predictor. And that's why I think the WHO and the oral health division looks at trying to maintain a certain number of teeth. I can't remember how many teeth it was exactly in a population as they're aging, because that sort of reflects on the overall health of that particular individual.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so it's I found it quite fascinating. I was listening to that particular presentation.
But we don't know directly in what aspects of health.
Just in general health, yeah, physical health. In fact, physical health is what they were talking about. You know, the cardiovascular diseases that we're discussing, diabetes and what have you.
Okay, so and that has a knock-on effect on mental health as you said. And the other thing that came through is 31.9% of our elderly reported themselves as having low social support in terms of their social interaction and perceived satisfaction from their subjective support. What does that mean? So, subjective support?
Yeah, in terms of the support that they get, because when we ask the questions, I think they've structured this question into functional support and also just structural support. Structural support is just your friends, your family, the number of people that you interact with. But perceived support or perceived functional support will be what is it that you receive or you perceive to receive from your family and friends. So if you actually get care or you can get to talk with your friends, there are some social interactions, then it's better health for those elderly rather than just having, I have 10 friends, but you don't do anything with your friends. So that's the difference between just a functional and also social structural support.
And if you talk about independence, your environment plays a big role as well. Yeah. In the city, for an example, I don't know, does any of that come through in terms of, you know, design of cities and you know, and I'm really quite disappointed that, you know, our rural folk seem to have bigger issues in terms of support. The environment may be better, but that's a different kind of problem, isn't it, Dr. Fariza?
Yeah. In terms of the design of the city, actually for design, I just found out that we actually have universal home designs, which is actually useful and important for people when they grow older. So as to ensure that the floor is not slippery, there's actually handrails for them and enough space in the bathroom or in the toilet, just in case if they need to go through with a wheelchair. So this kind of universal home design is actually already in place in all our, actually for those who are building the buildings and also for the homes. And in terms of the availability of space in an urban area, perhaps there's limited space for those elderly to actually explore and go out and do physical activity. And even if you go out, even if us, we go out and try to walk within in the city, it's a bit dangerous because there's no proper walkway or safe walkway.
I mean, public transport is, public transport is there, but even we're struggling with that. The last mile issue has not been solved, you know, for the disabled and all of that. I've still got a long way to go. Okay, we need to do something, Dr. Amir, because we're getting there. And for our sakes, we better sort this out. what about retirement, bereavement? That also came through in the Peace Project.
Oh, yeah, because it's also important for us to take care and take into consideration when somebody is already has passed away and they are in a bereavement state. Because in our project, we realized that there is feminization of aging. Women live longer than men and they'll be living alone. So we need to actually make sure that before anything happens, if we are able to get this information across, the family needs to have their will properly implemented before they pass on. And in terms of those things, make sure that there's enough funds for those who are left behind to support and continue on with their life. So it's very, very important for the family members to be together and also understand all this issues which is going on.
The needs. Yeah. There has to be a lot of conversations, don't you think? Interaction with children. Mm-hmm. You spoke about how we want to live in, I mean, we want to grow old
in aging one, in place.
In place, yeah. That's right. That is a very Asian thing, isn't it? I want to age in my house. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go anywhere else. So homes, there's stigma attached to it, filial piety and all of that. But how do we make sure that our elderly can actually age at home?
By getting our home equipped for the elderly, make sure that it is suitable for the elderly to stay in that particular house, so that they are aware about their own surrounding and it's not an alien place for them to continue living. So if they've been staying in a particular house for more than 40 years, so obviously they are familiar in terms of getting their way around the house, right? So hopefully this will avoid the other issues of them being in a strange place, in a strange house, in a strange land. So it is hopefully that particular house can be modified or improved in terms of getting it more age-friendly, just like what I mentioned just now. Getting it to be more in terms of the flooring, mm-hmm. in terms of the surrounding.
Yep. You know, Doctor, I mean, you look at people in the West and mm-hmm. they're happy to age. They live on their own. They're very independent. Why are we so different?
Well, I think we're not that different. Well, in the city, I think things are improving. Or we're not improving, sorry. Things have sort of changed towards that direction. There are lots more people living on their own, you know, connected on their own. I mean, we hear of our senior populations going together for trips overseas, you know, 65-year-old women and men literally going off. I mean, these things happen as well. So I think it's sort of happening. I think, but what we're lacking compared to other countries, my observation, studying overseas for so long, is that, as you mentioned, there are certain infrastructures that we just can't seem to get right, you know, that... You know, the for example, in Petaling Jaya, in Tamantun, where we are, these are areas where there's a large number of elderly population just by the fact that these are old neighbourhoods. But the infra doesn't seem to be accommodating to these individuals, what Dr. Fariza was sharing just now. You know, the sidewalks can't seem to, if we happen to be on a wheelchair right now, it's not that friendly to be on a sidewalk. When the sidewalks are there, it's just that it's not meant for us. Secondly is, of course, our public transport, as you rightly mentioned. So this limits mobility for some of these individuals. But because we're also becoming a little bit more Western and we're breaking out from sharing with each other in the community, so therefore you've got lots of people actually staying alone in their own houses, the terrace houses or bungalows, which I think a little bit more can be done. You know, I've been sharing... one of my hats that I have in the university is actually the director of the Community Engagement Centre. And we're actually talking with local leaders, particularly around University of Malaya, which is quite an old neighbourhood, about things like University of Life, which they have in Iceland. And this is where I was sharing just now, that these people in the past, in their past life, you know, they used to be somebody and mm-hmm. a pilot, engineer, a doctor, maybe a psychiatrist. And, you know, they come to this community place and they share with other people and people are learning about what they used to do. And people like us also can sit in there and listen, oh, you know, these things are happening. Or how was it during the World War and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So you're trying to build that sense of community, which I think we don't have that. You know, in other countries they do. They have a bingo club, you know, if that's what you're thinking. They have some other activities that these senior population will come together. They're living in their own houses and they come forward to meet up, and then there's that connection, the interaction, which often happens, which we still don't have yet, I think.
Or
we
don't have it. Did you call it University of Life?
The University of Life, yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's what I'm, well, we're hoping to build that.
I think in UPM, under the Gerontology Institute, they actually have the third age university for those who are elderly, but it's kind of a formal teaching and learning sessions. Mm-hmm. Rather than what you were mentioning, which is more of
a community, more of an engagement.
Yeah. I mean, celebrate your life, isn't it?
We want to take another PhD now,
right? University
when you're
of
60
life.
Years old.
Yes. Who knows, you know? I mean, what's wrong with that?
Oh, no, definitely nothing wrong. Yeah. Tun Daim had one, remember?
Yes.
More recently, graduated from our university.
Right? Yes, he has, indeed. Okay, so we're running out of time, but... Entry points for the elderly to access mental health, Dr. Amir. I mean, UMMC has apparently stopped accepting walk-in patients at their psychiatry clinic. They need a referral letter for new patients. What can patients do?
Yeah, that's quite unfortunate because as we increase the mental health awareness, lots of people are coming forward for help. And I think, as I've even shared this actually with the committee in one of the meetings I've said, that we really need to have everybody involved in providing that that sort of immediate health need. So if you're having an emergency, as we've shared, you can access the accident and emergency setting. If it's not urgent, you can actually access your general practitioners or the family medical specialist first. And if they feel that your condition requires some level of further intervention, then they will have a referral letter to access the mental health services across the country. And again, I would like to encourage everybody to use the hashtag #LetStopMindaSehat and get these kind of information out there so that the stakeholders will be able to know, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I really do, you know, I know we've had this conversation before, but I really do encourage people to write in, because as we're trying to understand what is needed for the country, having that kind of common hashtag voice that we can actually trace is helpful. And this is one of the issues. I mean, this was raised actually because I think one of the local media actually highlighted it. It was surprising. Access to help in UM was also something that went into news. But it's really something that, you know, we really need that conversation to come along.
Okay. Dr. Fariza, how can we strengthen our ability to better recognise mental health needs of the elderly?
Yeah, we need to actually reduce the stigma about mental health, not equating them as crazy people, because then only we are able to understand what is happening among those who are actually having mental illness or mental issues and try to help them improve their mental health.
Sure. Thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts with me. That was Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq Amir Nordin, a consultant psychiatrist from UMMC, and Associate Professor Dr. Fariza Muhammad Hairi from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.